It was a clear and sunny Sunday morning 20 years ago as Ed McLarney and his family were hiking on the south side of Mount St. Helens when the mountain, which had been brewing for almost 2 months, finally burst.
Slightly after 8 o'clock in the morning, the sky absolutely blackened. We realized the volcano had exploded. Shortly thereafter, we came into the clear and could look to our left and see that the volcano had erupted. After a while, one Forest Service employee came up out of the muddy river area and told us that the mountain had erupted. He was very frightened looking.
Don Swanson was gathering supplies that morning to replace fellow volcanologist David Johnston, who was monitoring Mount St. Helens from an observation post 5 miles away from the summit, a spot considered relatively safe.
I was in the Forest Service room that had the seismographs at 8:32 in the morning. People were bringing me supplies so that I could bring them out with me to replace Dave Johnston at Coldwater 2. I think I was the first person to notice the signal from the big earthquake coming in at 8:32. I looked at the signal long enough to know that it was real, and then raced upstairs to the radio desk and called for Dave and got no reply.
Johnston and 56 other people died the morning of May 18th, 1980. 23 square miles of mountain slid into the Toutle River Valley. The ensuing blast spread ash and debris over 230 square miles. A column of ash reached into the stratosphere and around the world, while melting snow turned the freshly loosened ground into rivers of mud that terrorized the river valleys below. The fireworks of the eruption and the sheer devastation captivated the public's imagination. For geologists, the chance to observe an active volcano proved irresistible.
Following nearly 2 months of both earthquake activity, explosions, and tremendous amount of deformation or bulging on the north flank of the volcano was tremendously exciting for the scientific community, as this many of the scientists had no idea that they would actually be able to witness a volcano erupting in the U.S. in their lifetimes.
Ed Klimaszewskis of the U.S. Geological Survey says Mount St. Helens woke up so fast that scientists had to scrounge everywhere for enough instruments to monitor the mountain.
If we look back at 1980, the capabilities in terms of volcano monitoring were somewhat limited. We had to borrow, in some cases, the geodimeter that did much of the deformation measurements was borrowed from the Smithsonian. Mount St. Helens is really one of the most studied volcanoes in the world and has one of the most complete sets of data in terms of monitoring and study of the deposits at this point in time.
Since 1980, Mount St. Helens has settled down to a normal 60 earthquakes per month. In the 20 years since the eruption, scientists have flocked to Mount St. Helens, which has been dubbed as one giant laboratory.
Mount St. Helens, basically, you could think of that as being a big disturbance. I mean, obviously, it was amazingly calamitous.
Peter Frenzen is the monument scientist at the Mount St. Helens National Volcanic Monument.
Also, the plants and animals that experience the avalanche and the lateral blast, which essentially flattened 230 square miles of forest. After that was over, then, as far as the plants and animals are concerned, all of the remnants of that last forest that have been toppled and strewn about essentially become habitat and for plants, new growing space. So from that point forward, what we've seen is the animals or the plants that survived are really the starting point for the next ecosystem in development.
Photojournalist Al Hayward was an avid mountain climber and had scaled Mount St. Helens several times. On the morning of the eruption, Hayward planned to be on the summit. A discouraging forecast the Friday before caused him to delay his trip. News of the eruption brought him back, and over the years he has taken more than 30,000 slides of the mountain.
I guess one of the things that always impressed me, and the loggers that went in there to do the salvage logging, found it very depressing. Because it was all gray. It was gray on gray. There was no greens. There was no other color. Psychologically, the lack of color was very depressing to him, and that always stuck in my mind.
Ed McLarney is now Escamania County Commissioner. He says the people who live here are trying their best to move on.
There has been a great change in the social structure. About 67% of the people of employable age travel outside of Escamania County every day to go to work in Vancouver, Portland, or up in the Hood River area, but most of them commute every day, and the natural resources-based economy that we used to enjoy is essentially a thing of the past.
Peter Frenzen sees challenges ahead for the scientific community as well, as the novelty of the eruption has faded, along with funding for more research.
this 20-year period has provided an enormous wealth of information and a great starting point for the long-term studies. But if you think about the life of a old-growth forest or the kinds of changes that occur over time, 20 years is really only the opening chapter. So I think scientists are concerned about how that will be accomplished.
I'm Fareed Guillot.